Because f*** the remake.
Yeah, because f*** the remake.
Radiodrome. I'm not sure if you would call Radiodrome a horror show or a comedy show, but I am Josh Hadley. With me, as always, is Cecil the Robot.
You're a horror comedy.
That is the dumbest comeback ever.
They can't all be gems.
Special guest Mike White. Was that not a dumb comeback?
I'm more of a dramedy myself.
Well, you know what you two can do? You two can both go get fucked by going to adamandeve.com and using the promo code DROME, where you would get 10 free gifts. You'd get 6 free DVDs, a free mystery gift, a gift for him, a gift for her, and free U.S. shipping. So tonight we're going to talk horror comedies. Making an actual horror movie is difficult. Making a funny comedy is difficult. It should be difficult to make a horror comedy. Yet, there are so many attempts, and I think so few, that work as both a horror film and a comedy. What do you look for in a horror comedy? More horror or more comedy or an even balance?
I think I go more for the comedy than the horror. The horror can be kind of layered on. If it's scary and not funny, that's one thing. If it's funny and not scary, that's another. I think that it is a little tougher to do really good comedy than it is to do really good horror, but that might just be me.
I look for a nice mix of the two, because usually if a movie will gradually go from starting off humorous and then get more scary as it goes along, I think that usually works out the best. Still peppering in the humor throughout, long as there's a balance. It's a very tough balance to get, but I have seen quite a few that actually do fit the bill quite, you know, very well.
I would agree with that it is a hard balance. Sometimes you don't want that balance, though. You look at some of the ones we're going to bring up tonight, and there are definitely comedies first that happen to have horror movie elements to them. And then you have other ones that are straight out horror movies that happen to have a lot of humor in them. I think most horror comedies, they don't try to make a balance. They choose one over the other and then use trappings of the other. I don't agree with this theory, but I like Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy and whatnot. A lot of people say that, like, those kind of movies, those kind of horror comedies actually wrecked the horror, that they can't take Frankenstein's monster seriously. They can't take Bela Lugosi as Dracula seriously again after they've been defeated by Abbott and Costello. Does that hurt the monsters that they were meeting?
Maybe within the confines of the film, but I think a lot of people take things way too seriously. Like, when you see something and it ruins something for you, you know, lighten up. It's not the same thing. Like, when you see a movie and it's been scary for all these years, and then all of a sudden you see a character and they're kind of being undone by Abbott and Costello, I think maybe you're going a little bit too much into it. I don't see it as ruining it. I just see it as being something else. And then if you don't want it ruined, if you're afraid that that's going to happen, then just don't watch it.
Oh, I love the Abbott and Costello's, and I don't necessarily retroactively not get scared by the Frankenstein and Dracula films after having seen, I mean, I grew up on Abbott and Costello, and going in and seeing Frankenstein and Dracula for the first time years afterwards, I was completely blown away by them, and I wasn't just like snickering, oh yeah, these are the guys that Abbott and Costello defeated. No, I was able to separate them. I mean, there's just such a difference in atmosphere and intention with those earlier films. You can watch Evil Dead 1 and then watch Evil Dead 2, almost the exact same story, but Evil Dead 1 still scares the shit out of me. Evil Dead 2 still makes me laugh.
And see, I look at like the Abbott and Costello Meets movies as they feel like a universal film. And especially like Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy, I think the Mummy is still threatening in that movie. Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, the monster is still threatening. It's just the guys are a little bit goofier. I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing, yet I've read review after review where people say Abbott and Costello wrecked the Universal monsters. I don't agree with that. But then you've got other ones like in the 1960s, you had Roger Corman. He was doing all those Poe pictures, and then for whatever reason, he decided for The Raven, let's try making it a comedy. Do you think something like the Poe pictures translated well to comedy? Because I don't particularly find The Raven to be funny, but I see what he was going for. Is it just me that didn't get it?
I don't think it's a matter of not getting it. I kind of agree with you that it wasn't that funny either. I mean, it was a chuckle-worthy movie, but it wasn't a guffaw for me either. And I don't necessarily, again, even though they were shooting, same sets, same actors, all that kind of stuff, knowing Corman, I still am able to separate these films out very easily in my mind as far as which one is, you know, which ones are which and which ones are effective and which ones just aren't that effective. So, yeah, I didn't see The Raven as being that funny either.
I just don't think, Poe stuff really lends itself well to humor in the first place. So I didn't think that it really worked.
Well, sticking with the 1960s, how about the choice that every child in the 1960s had to make? Lily Munster or Morticia Adams? Adams Family versus the Munsters. They were both very much horror comedies, but they were both very different. The Munsters was more slapstick and arguably more fun, whereas the Adams Family, at least to me, was much more serious while still being humorous and definitely more adult by the fact that they actually had a sexual relationship and sexual innuendo. Where do you fall? Are you a Lily or are you a Morticia man?
I think that I am more of a Morticia man just because I would rather hang out with the Adams than I would with the Munsters necessarily. I found their world more appealing to me. It felt like the Munsters were much more isolated, and I know the Adamses were pretty isolated, but I guess it was because they would have the different relatives coming in. It felt like there was a bigger world outside of just their house. So you would get, you know, Morticia's sister and different people out there. So it felt like there were more weirdos in the world, and that's the kind of world I wanted to live in.
I liked both shows for different reasons, but I think that as far as being, you know, in one particular world, I like the Addams Family universe better. It just the characters were more interesting. They weren't particularly knockoffs of other characters. They had more of like a drier sense of humor, whereas the Munsters was more kind of sitcom-y.
I agree with that. Like I said, I think the Addams Family was a little bit more mature. Their jokes were a little more layered to the point where I think the Munsters was more of a sitcom. The Addams Family was more of a comedy. And yes, I am making a distinction there. But then when you get into the 70s, you started to see more overt horror comedies. Like, obviously, Young Frankenstein, which is, I think, an honest classic. But then you have stuff like Werewolf of Washington or Attack of the Killer Tomatoes that are just so ridiculously over the top that they're obviously more comedy than they are horror. Do you think that was a 70s thing, or do you think that was just the ones that stick out did that?
I think that is just that was the camp value was high, and that's kind of what worked. So we ended up seeing more of them, and a lot of them are more memorable because of that.
Yeah, the 70s were a weird time in terms of just the different types of genres that were being explored, and nothing was necessarily off the table. By the way, before I forget, I wanted to let you know it's pronounced Frankenstein.
The title is spelled Frankenstein, you know. It's the same way I will not say Ralph Fiennes. His name is spelled Ralph. It's pronounced Ralph, all right? What about parody? Does parody fall into this something like Piranha, Joe Dante and Roger Corman's Piranha? Because by their own admission, it's a straight-out parody of Jaws. Does that still qualify then as a horror comedy, or is parody something different?
Well, I think if it's done more straight, I guess it's okay. I mean, I can see something like a Critters being a little bit scary, but also being kind of a little bit of a parody of other things. It was almost more of a knockoff of Gremlins, I suppose. But I don't know. I guess horror film parodies are really more my sweet spot. But I've never found any of them particularly scary whatsoever. I can't think of any of them that are actually frightening whatsoever.
I would think parody does not lend itself well to actually being scary, though.
No, you inherently you have to be making fun of the stuff that you're calling into the film. So I'm guessing that every time you're going to be bringing something in and then immediately trying to turn it on its head. You know, something like in Student Bodies. Or
I was just thinking of that one actually, Mike. I was just thinking of Student Bodies when you were right before you said it.
Or, you know, Saturday the 14th or any of these films are going to bring in something.
Except Saturday the 14th isn't remotely funny, though.
Boo, well, a lot of these movies kind of suffer that way, too. You know, thinking of like some of the scary movie films, you know, or like Paranormal Whacktivity or A Haunted House, some of those things. I mean, unfortunately,
is there an actual movie called Paranormal Whacktivity?
Yes. No, it came out right around the same time as A Haunted House, one of the Wayans brothers. And there's a sequel to that one, too, which I haven't watched yet.
I guess I'm glad to have been in ignorance all this time.
Oh, yeah. No, that's my thing, is watching these horrible parody movies. So just so you know that I suffer so that other people don't have to.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I've never really found them scary at all, but some of them, like Pandemonium by Alfred Soul, like that one I find very funny. I find elements of Wacko funny. I find elements of Student Bodies funny. But yeah, unfortunately, there's for every one of those, there's a Dracula Dead and Loving It kind of thing.
Oh,
so
God,
it's
is that awful.
For someone who can make Young Frankenstein and then make Dracula Dead and Loving It, it's just like, wow, the train really went off the tracks.
And now, here's a weird thing. I looked over a whole bunch of lists of horror comedies today, and all of them listed An American Werewolf in London, and that's fair. Mm-hmm. Not a single one listed The Howling, which I think is really unfair. Because I think The Howling, just like Piranha, it might not be as satirical. That's a comedy.
Yeah, there's definitely elements of that that are very funny. But I think that it might have been sullied by the films that followed it. I mean, American Werewolf in Paris, there had been so many years between that and the first one that you can separate the two. But with The Howling, it felt like the subsequent films came so quickly and just, threw everything off when it just kind of ruined the effect of that first Howling. But I don't see that one being as overtly funny as something like American Werewolf in London. I think American Werewolf in London, to me, is a scarier film and a more effective film in both the scares and the laughs.
I'm a Howling man.
The thing with The Howling is it's not in your face funny, I guess you could say. Like with American Werewolf in London, there are moments where you know this is supposed to be funny. And there are really silly, goofy moments, like his buddy who is constantly decaying. And
I was just about to say, Griffin Dunn constantly coming back a little worse for wear each time.
Yeah, he's just more and more just falling apart. And whereas The Howling, there's a lot of just funny moments, but they're punctuated like in between some really good scares. So it's not as obvious that it's supposed to be funny. So I think that it's not so much that they're being snobbish about it. It's just that it's not Howling is more horror than it is comedy.
Well, what about arguably one of the most famous horror comedies ever, and one that I think is a fantastically brilliant film, Ghostbusters? I think that's one of the few horror comedies that blended the horror and the comedy properly. Because like Mike, you said, usually the comedy if it overwhelms the horror, the movie's not scary. There are legitimate scares in Ghostbusters, yet it never stops being funny.
I could actually, I think that one of the earlier drafts of the script, it was a little bit scarier than it ended up being. But yeah, you're right. That is, I just recently rewatched that. They were bringing that out to theaters again. And yeah, it does have some genuine scares, but I tend to remember the laughs more than the scares. But I think they do a good job of blending the two together.
Ghostbusters is one of those perfect movies. It's just the laughs are there. The scary moments are there. It's just everybody is just firing on point. You've got an amazing cast. Like the banter between everybody is just so smart and just quick. And it's hilarious. And then it does go into parts where it's scary because the optical effects of the ghosts are so freaking
good. You tell me you
did
not jump the first time they said get her.
Oh, yeah, wait, yeah. And they all ran. Oh, it was so good because it's so unexpected. You know, the freaking library,
Actually, probably the creepiest part for me in that is when the demons come through Dana Barrett's door and start ripping up through her recliner.
Oh, and they grab her and
if your fridge yelled Zool at you, you'd probably be a little freaked out.
Oh God, yeah.
What about now? I don't like this movie. I do agree it deserves to be listed as a horror comedy, and I like the second film better, which you both might crucify me for. I didn't find Fright Night really to be all that funny.
I'm not going to shit on you for it. I mean, you know, you like what you like. Yeah. Fright Night's a good movie. I've seen it a lot more than I've seen the second one, but that's not to say that the second one's bad. The second one's also very good. And I also felt a lot better with the second one as far as having Tracy Lynd be the love interest.
Oh my God, Tracy Lynd, yes.
How did... I'm like, man, did you step up? You went from Marcy Darcy to freaking Tracy Lynd. The first one, it's definitely a horror comedy because it's another horror comedy that pokes fun at a lot of the horror tropes, because you've got Evil Ed who's doing the old he's the talk show or the old horror guy, and you know, the neighbor's the vampire. It's fun and funny and just an entertaining film. I still haven't seen the remake because I just can't bring myself to,
because the remake.
Yeah, because the remake. But the sequel, you had Brian Johnson, you had Tracy Lynd. It's they're both really good movies. They're both good horror comedies, but I would put them more with the comedy than the horror once again.
Yeah, Fright Night. I mean, I won't shit on you for not liking it either. I came to that one pretty darn late, and I enjoyed it when I watched it. I think I've seen it two or three times now, and find it enjoyable. I don't find the second one as great as the first one. It's a good blend to me if you're going to do horror and comedy, and I thought that they did that part of it well. But yeah, I can. It's not something that I'm going to get like an entire sleeve of tattoos, you know, on my arm of Fright Night characters or something. I don't like it that much.
What about Jim Carrey's first starring role, Once Bitten, a film that I think is straight out comedy that just uses horror elements? Except a lot of the comedy tends to work. I know the movie got destroyed by the critics. I think Once Bitten has got a lot of genuine humor in it. It's just about vampires.
I have blocked that movie out of my head if I've ever seen it. Wasn't the actress with the gap in her teeth, wasn't she in it?
Lauren
Hutt.
You
know who I'm talking about. Yeah. Was she in that?
Yeah. Lauren Hutt is the vampire.
Yeah, I was reminded of stuff like... When I was watching it, I was reminded of like Shrunken Heads, the really bad Richard Elfman film, or even like the Bordello of Blood, those kind of things. It felt kind of forced to me when it came to adding the laughs to the horror. And I don't know, it's not one that I go back to.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember enjoying it. The one part that always stands out to me that I do think is a very genuinely funny moment is when Jim Carrey is at the drive-in and he's trying to have sex with his girlfriend and she won't put out. And so he gets out of the car and he's walking away. Every other car is rocking up and down. Like, I thought that was a genuinely like laugh out loud funny moment.
This is what sucks about Once Bitten. To me, the funniest scene in the whole thing is the one scene they have to censor when they show it on TV. When the female vampires... is questioning the virginal girlfriend.
Mark doesn't want you because you're mean and evil. He wants me because I'm nice and sweet and pure. So fuck off! After that virgin! Come on!
And I just laughed so hard at that.
That is a good point. Yeah, I just as soon as you started in the I'm sweet and I'm kind of remember that, I was like, oh yeah, right.
Except that scene, every time it's on like Comedy Central, that joke's cut out, so you go, damn it.
Well, then that was a PG-13 movie too, wasn't it? So wasn't it? Yeah, because it was they pulled their one, you know, they used their one card very effectively. I think it's I'm going off of just memory here, but I remember enjoying it. I remember it being a little bit long, but I remember thinking it was funny.
It also had some weird self-referential humor. Like, you know, as the vampires are chasing them through Lauren Hutton's house, they're just knocking down doors. And at one point she goes, can you idiots just try a doorknob? I have to replace every single one of these doors tomorrow. And then they try the doorknob and it just opens and he kind of, I'm like, that's funny. Well, what about when a horror comedy tries to be both and fails so miserably that it becomes a joke unintentionally? Haunted Honeymoon. I don't know how that movie failed to be either horror or comedy as badly as it did. And Mike, I heard you giggle, so you know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah, as soon as you said Haunted Honeymoon, I thought of the video box cover, and then I flashed to Nothing But Trouble for some reason. So, yeah, there were a few of them that just were there.
The bizarre time Dan Aykroyd said, you know what? Texas Chainsaw Massacre could be a sitcom.
Oh, yeah. A few of them. I know you like Transylvania 65,000, but that one seems to be in that same kind of blockbuster shelf to me as well.
Which is not unfair.
Well, Transylvania 65,000 is funny. That's definitely way more comedy than horror, though.
Like, oh, absolutely.
I'd say like 90% comedy, like 10% horror.
And it just uses the horror elements. But then there's one that made every single list I looked at, and I don't see this as a horror comedy at all, and that's Return of the Living Dead. I think this is a straight-out horror movie that happens to have some comedic moments in it. I've never quite understood why Return of the Living Dead is considered a horror comedy. I mean, the second one's definitely a comedy, and it's a terrible film. I'm just talking the 1985 original.
That might be one of the more pure horror comedies to me. I mean, that is, it definitely is more on the scale for horror, but you have some really good laughs in it. I mean, I saw this recently with an audience in Chicago, and people were just roaring, and, you know, for good reason. I mean, between the gasps. So there were so many good lines. I mean, having, you know, Clu Gulager's character there at the beginning just really kind of sets the tone for everything. You know, some of those great laugh lines, like, you know, send more cops, those kind of things. I mean, there are so many good laugh lines to this, but yes, it is genuinely scary. So I think that one, to me, really hits when it comes to that's what a horror comedy should be. You should have the scares and have the good laughs going on in between. And there's a lot of stuff where you think it's going to go one way and it goes another. So that one I would hold up as being, this is what you should do when it comes to horror comedy.
Definitely more horror than comedy, but it's absolutely a horror comedy. I mean, for crying out loud, the boyfriend is begging his girlfriend to let him eat her brains. I mean, he's, please let me eat your brains. Like Mike said, the send more cops line is just fantastic. It's funny. It's unexpected. The effects are amazing. And it's
the effects are so good. You can't even tell that Linnea Quigley is wearing a baby doll after she's zombified to avoid an X rating.
Well,
yeah,
sure,
I would
man.
Put that one up there with like House or
House was actually next on my list.
Yes,
I was going to bring up House
even
next.
Creepshow, you know? Yeah. I mean, that, yeah. These are genuinely scary movies that really make me laugh, too.
Now, see, when it comes to the House films, and I haven't seen House, the first one, in quite some time, I remember that one being much more horror than comedy. I don't know why, but I prefer House 2, which is definitely much more of a comedy than a horror film. But for some reason, House 2, the second story, which has got a great pun right in the title, I like better.
I don't remember the last time I saw House 2, but definitely House 1 was the one that I would go back to. And I just, just the chemistry between the characters and everything. And I didn't know whether to laugh or to scream with a lot of these things. So I really thought that it had some good scares and some great laughs. And it's kind of surprising. I mean, like, you look at the cast now and you're like, yeah, these are all kind of second stringers, you know, like Norm from Cheers and William Cadd and the Bull from Night Court and Richard Mull. So it's just like, Yeah, these are all kind of like B-level 80s actors, but they all pull it off so well. It shouldn't have worked, but it ended up working for me.
Really only like the first one. Like, I think the first one is just fantastic. It's another great horror comedy. There are some genuinely scary moments, like when he looks up the chimney and there's that witch thing.
Or when he opens the closet and that big Clive Barker looking demon comes out at him.
Yes. Just, yeah. So, I mean, and some of the visuals in that, like when he goes into the pool to like get his son and they do the side where he's like, he's obviously no longer in the pool. You know, it's just this huge thing. And there's the light coming out from the entrance. It's just some really great like directing stuff in that, and really love the first one. It is genuinely got some funny moments, like when the freaking everything in the house is coming to life. There's the swordfish on the wall is just shaking back and forth, and he shoots it with a shotgun. Richard Maul, when he comes out with the zombie makeup, is scary as hell looking. Because you're not expecting this movie to kind of go into a Vietnam area.
Like, it was 86. Mm-hmm. What movie wasn't going into a Vietnam area?
But, you know, it was unexpected for this kind of movie, especially a movie about a haunted house. You're not expecting it to have a tie into child death and Vietnam.
Leaving RoboCop 3 out, since we're talking Fred Decker, he wrote House 1 and 2. What about the two Fred Decker horror comedies, Night of the Creeps and The Monster Squad? I think both of those pull off the balance perfectly. Both of those are hilarious movies, and they both come across as scary. I mean, like, even in Monster Squad, you're never sure. The monsters are killing cops and whatnot. You go, they could kill one of these kids. And then there's that whole part with the concentration camp survivor that he doesn't know Dracula, but he knows monsters, and then they pan down to his tattoo, and you go, this actually did balance all this stuff properly.
They are also two quintessential horror comedies. Night of the Creeps is genuinely scary and genuinely funny. They definitely ramp up the scares at the end. Like, it starts off lighthearted and gets more and more like scary when the zombies...
Hey, Cecil, thrill me.
Exactly. Oh, he's so good in that. Some YouTuber was like, oh, this is a movie with the asshole that says to thrill me. And I'm like, you shut your whore mouth. Don't you badmouth Tom Atkins. But it's so freaking good. And then at the end, you know, with the, you know, ladies, your dates are here. Or no, the good news, and the bad news. Yeah, your dates are here. Bad news. They're dead. Such a great movie. And then
the Creeps.
Or Monster Squad, rather, yes. Monster Squad is just a way of taking the classic monsters and turning them on their ear, putting a new spin on them, and just making it cool, making them interesting, making them funny. Wolfman's got nards. Come on. It's great stuff. And like you said, with the monsters might end up killing one of the kids. You never know, especially back in the 80s.
Yeah, I've never seen Night of the Creeps. I finally saw Monster Squad like a year ago, and I just wasn't into it. I think maybe had I grown up with it, it might have been a different story. But yeah, I was just
That's
like...
That's a fair enough assessment.
Why do they keep making fun of that fat kid? It's not very nice. I would have been the fat kid. And then I started crying. So...
Well, what about something that's a little more overt in both? Night of the Demons. I can see how Night of the Demons is considered a horror comedy because there's quite a bit of comedy in the first half hour. After that, there's no comedy. So I don't know if I would call Night of the Demons a horror comedy because there's no jokes in the last hour of the film. So I don't know if that one balances it quite right.
I have not seen Night of the Demons.
You get to see Linnea Quigley push a lipstick tube through her own nipple.
Oh, interesting.
Hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I love Night of the Demons. And yeah, that part is one of those great, like, head scratchers. Because watching
you
that,
go,
you're
did
like,
I just see what I just saw?
Because it's so from out of left field. You're like, okay, all right, she's rubbing lipstick on her. What? Like, it definitely starts off more funny as they're all getting to the party. And then once, you know, the demons are unleashed, then things go downhill and they get really scary. But it still does have some dark humor, you know, with the old guy eating was it cookies with razors in them or candy?
Apples. No, it apples was apples. They
went with the old standby with apples. Yeah, so easy. And then so that's kind of like funny because it's like that kind of tied in with what they were talking about earlier. And so it did have a little bit of humor, but definitely once the demons came out, it went straight into more horror and kind of the comedy took a backseat. But I would still call it a horror comedy.
What about a movie that billed itself and sold itself as more of a comedy, but I think genuinely works as a horror film, especially once the ending is revealed? 1989's The Burbs, a movie I adore. adore and I think is genuinely funny. And the last 15 minutes have a lot of genuine horror elements to it.
You know, I saw The Burbs at the movies when it was out originally, and I haven't gone back to see it since. So I need to check that one out again, because seeing it the first time, I was just like, yeah, I'm not really digging this. So I know that people love that movie, and it's one of those where I have bought a copy of it, and now I need to actually watch it again.
It's one of the Joe Dante movies I haven't seen in quite a while, but I always remember enjoying it.
I actually have parts of that movie in my everyday vernacular. My neighbors are weirdos, and they don't tend their lawn at all. We've actually nicknamed them the Klopex. Well, let's go into the 90s then. What about a movie that's not traditionally thought of as a horror film, but I think it's very much a creature feature and does fit it? Arachnophobia. It's a genuinely funny movie, mainly with John Goodman for the funny parts, that, especially if you're arachnophobic at all, is a genuinely scary movie. When they kill Julian Sands, I nearly got up and left because I was creeped the fuck out. But then I'm also scared of spiders.
I hate bugs. So arachnophobia, like, really, really got under my skin. And that one, majorly, they build as they called it the thrillomedy. They for whatever reason they didn't want to call it a horror comedy. They were like,
yeah, they were very much avoiding the horror. But come on, it's a creature feature, really.
Oh, it's absolutely a creature feature. I still don't know why they. I guess, you know, somebody in marketing thought that horror would be bad or whatever. Said, oh, it's the first thrillomedy. It's a funny ass movie and a really genuinely good movie, and it has a lot of very uncomfortable, scary moments, especially if you don't like bugs, because there it is. The last half hour of the movie is nothing but goddamn spiders everywhere. I love it. I think that it does a great job of balancing out the horror and the comedy. And but it definitely veers way more into the horror for the last act.
I think it definitely set the bar when it came to these kind of insect creature feature type
thrillomedies,
movies.
Apparently.
Yeah. I mean, Slither is up there for me when it comes to this kind of stuff, but then other ones like Eight-Legged Freaks or Big Ass Spider, I mean, to me, that's the king of the spider films. I mean, even better than, you know, the Kingdom of the Spiders with Shatner.
Want a date? Going out? Looking for some action? Need some company? Got any money?
What about Frankenhooker? A movie that is a straight-out comedy. That happens to be also a gore film set in like a horror movie universe. What about something like Frankenhooker?
You know, when I think of Frankenhooker, I think of, you know, I really liked Frankenhooker. Let me just put that out there. But I'm reminded of other films like Reanimator and what was the, some of those other films that just had that kind of gore thing going on. Frankenhooker was the tops of that list. I don't know what it is about Reanimator, but I've never been able to get into that film. And I know some people love it.
I love it.
And
I'm one of them.
That's another horror comedy, but I've never been able to. I think I've watched the entire thing once. And the last time I tried to watch it, I got about 15 minutes in and I turned it off.
Oh, Frankenhooker is great. Frankenhooker is hilarious. And Patty Mullins just with the goofy.
Want a date?
Yeah, want a date? Making that goofy face.
She is perfect. Oh, she's, God, yeah.
Yeah, she is just. It's a funny ass movie. It's a shame. I think that a lot of people don't watch it simply because of the title. It sounds so exploitative, which it kind of is, but that doesn't make it a bad movie. It's still very funny. And that definitely is way more in the comedy than horror, but still just a funny-ass movie.
We're going to go over and talk a little bit about some Kiwis here. I never liked Brain Dead, Dead Alive. Yes, it is a horror comedy. I'm not debating that. I never liked this. Am I missing something in Brain Dead, Dead Alive? Everyone was constantly telling me how amazing this movie was, and then I saw it when it first came to video, and I was just like, I'm not into this at all.
Oh, I absolutely love this movie. I really love it. I mean, other than King Kong and the, what was that, the Bones, the...
Lovely Bones?
Really shitty. Lovely Bones. Other than those films, I've been really a Peter Jackson supporter for the last however many years, and seeing Bad Taste and Dead Alive and seeing the way that he's kind of progressed through his career. I mean, you know, Heavenly Creatures, but Dead Alive for me, I mean, it's, you know, it doesn't exist without Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, I should say, but it's it really does it for me, and just keeps ramping up the gore and the bad taste of everything. I mean, the blood in the porridge scene, and just so many stupid funny things for me that I just you know, once, and when we get to the end with the lawnmower, I was just laughing my ass off, and I can't say it's one that I go back to that often. I've only seen it maybe 3 or 4 times, but it is definitely burned in my brain. I mean, I will go back to the Evil Dead 2 much more often.
I kick ass for the Lord. It's so quotable and just
yes,
funny and disgusting. And the part, holy crap, when he's chasing the zombie through the park and he grabs it and starts smashing its head into the post, and everybody is like, all the women and everybody are just freaking out. I was howling laughing. The movie is hysterical. It's so bloody. It's so disgusting. It's just got so many memorable moments in it. The creativity that came out of that. The guy gets his head lopped off, but it's still alive and it's in the blender. It just such a creative movie, and it showed just how creative Peter Jackson was. Like, I like Mike, I had seen Bad Taste, and I immediately was like, I need to see everything else by this guy immediately. But at the time, the only two movies that he had out were Bad Taste and Meet the Feebles. And Meet the Feebles is just weird.
Meet the Feebles, I think, is a better idea than it is a film.
Yeah, that's the Meet the Feebles and his King Kong are the two for me where I'm not particularly big on. But I remember then Dead Alive came out and I was like, oh my God, Peter Jackson's doing a zombie movie. And it did not disappoint. It was so freaking good. And the Frighteners and Heavenly Creatures.
The Frighteners is actually on my list because I think that's the best Peter Jackson movie. I love the – now, I need to say, I love the – quote, fun cut, the cut that puts all of Jeffrey Combs' scenes back in and all of the scenes that allow the movie to make sense, which Peter Jackson for some reason refuses to call a director's cut. That version is fantastic. The theatrical version is a goddamn nightmare, which the first time I saw The Frighteners, I saw it, I rented it, and I'm like, this movie, I don't get why everyone's liking it. This movie is terrible. Then I got the Laserdisc and I saw the extended cut and I went, this movie is fantastic. It's amazing what 20 minutes of footage added back in can do.
I've only seen the theatrical cut, which I saw in the theater, and I've never gone back to it, but I've wanted to see that longer version. So it's one that I cut a lot of slack to.
It changes the entire movie.
You're talking to somebody who has spent 6 hours today watching the first two Lord of the Rings movies, the extended cuts. So I definitely know when it comes to him extending stuff that it makes a huge difference. So
how about, and I know Mike can talk about this one, how about one of when something that sounds like it should absolutely work on paper really doesn't? And that's Wes Craven directing Eddie Murphy as a vampire in modern day. Vampire in Brooklyn. I despised this film. It wasn't scary. It wasn't funny. But Mike, I think you can agree with me. On paper, that should have worked.
I don't even know. I mean, because when you sign Eddie Murphy for something, especially at that time, you're signing Eddie Murphy and his ego and his clout that he had. And so Wes Craven, I mean, he brought along some of the actors that he'd worked with before, you know, Mitch Pileggi and Joanna Cassidy and these folks, but it was just an Eddie Murphy film. I mean, doing the different characters and all that kind of shit, I mean, it was just terrible. I just rewatched that again like 2 weeks ago, and oh my God, there was one part where it was just like, I ended up and I was helping my wife bring in groceries and I came back in. I was just like, oh my God, this movie is still on. How long is this fucking movie? It just went on forever.
I was actually just talking to Alex about this. I have not seen it, and apparently I have made the right decision.
You have.
But The movie evidently opens with, what is it, something like Eddie Murphy Presents and Eddie Murphy Productions starring Eddie Murphy.
Directed by Wes Craven.
And then in little tiny letters, directed by Wes Craven. So this was when Eddie Murphy's ego was at an all-time high, and he was just, you know, making nothing but his own vanity projects, and they were bombing because they were terrible. It could have been something, but instead it was just garbage.
Well, what about a movie that had no right to be as funny as it was? I'm still pissed that the over amount of really bad late 90s CGI, but I genuinely laughed at Lake Placid at multiple points. Lake Placid should not have been funny. Why was it?
Betty White.
Betty White was a big reason. also, David E. Kelly's script. David E. Kelly's script was almost a satire of creature features while being played totally straight as a creature feature, though.
Yeah, I tell you to suck it. Come on. That was back when nobody knew that Betty White was filthy.
But it was. I mean, and this was before all these piece of shit sci-fi movies that have been, you know, just flooding us and stuff. So this was, you know, it was along the lines of, you know, Piranha or some of these creature features that had their, you know, their tongue in their cheek, you know, the, alligator or whatever, these kind of films. It had been such a long time since we had one of those, and it was before the glut of these horrible sci-fi films that you were able to actually see this and enjoy it. And yeah, Betty White, she just fucking rocked that movie.
She stole that film. Bubba Hotep. Bubba Hotep was a fantastic movie that balanced both. It's a little bit more of a comedy, but it uses the horror elements in a proper way, if you will. Because, Mike, I do agree with you. Eight-Legged Freaks is amusing, but it's not great. Club Dread had its moments, but it didn't all work. The Evil Bong movies, My Name is Bruce, stuff like that, they didn't completely work for me. Bubba Hotep totally worked for me.
Yeah, Bubba Hotep, I've only seen it the one time, and I really wanted to like it a lot more than I did. I have recently acquired that, and I was like, I should probably show this to my wife because I think she might get a kick out of it, and I kind of want to give it a second chance. But seeing it the first time, I was just like, yeah, this probably would have been a really good short story, which I think it was. Not necessarily feature-length film. I don't think that it had enough there to be feature length, but I don't know. When it comes to horror comedies in the 2000s, I know it's cliche, but I really like Shaun of the Dead. That to me works on both horror and comedy, though, albeit much more comedy.
Yeah, I was going to say the reason I didn't include Shaun of the Dead was I think that's much more of a comedy that happens to take place during a zombie apocalypse than anything else.
Where do you come down on like Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
I haven't seen that, so I have no opinion of it.
Oh,
see it immediately.
A lot of these lists included a movie I love, John Dies at the End. I don't consider John Dies at the End a comedy. I just consider it a really weird movie.
No, it's funny.
Yeah, it is. It's genuinely funny. That to me was Coscarelli, you know, really hitting on all cylinders.
Oh, absolutely.
So I would take that one over Bubba Hotep, even though I love the idea of Bruce Campbell playing an elderly Elvis, and I kind of wish that there had just been like a whole series of him playing this kind of renegade, faked his own death Elvis kind of thing.
There was but there was a huge fallout between Coscarelli and Bruce Campbell, so.
Yeah, I mean, I hate that egos get in the way when it comes to this stuff.
Bubba Hotep is great. I think that it's clever, it's funny, it's unique, and definitely I was in love with it as soon as I heard. I'm like, wait, JFK is black and Elvis is still alive and they're in a nursing home and they're what?
And they're fighting a zombie or they're fighting a mummy.
Yeah, fighting mummy. This is yes. Why, you know, and it is sad because they. So we're setting this up to do Bubba Nosferatu, and it fell apart. And I would love for them to be able to kind of mend their differences and kind of make it, but we'll see. John Dies at the End is just incredible. Like Mike said, it's Coscarelli firing on all cylinders. The creativity was there. The characters were there. It was just awesome. And more like that. More movies where it's just unfiltered, just, holy crap, this is a whole lot of stuff that nobody's ever done before. This is just creativity unbound. Like, I really love that movie.
Well, Mike, you said you had a couple that, and I'll admit I've never heard of these. Tell us a little bit about The Item, Murder Party, and Blood Car.
The Item is, it's a puppet horror film, in that it's a case that is given to these kind of, it was in that era of Reservoir Dog ripoff kind of thing, where you had the people in a small room and they're fighting and they have guns kind of stuff. But there's an element of supernatural. There's this puppet that lives in this case. It was kind of like the Seven Faces of Dr. Lau, but crazy, crazy stuff. And it was one of these where the studio, when they put it out on DVD, they went in and they cut out a lot of the blood and gore and actually made it scarier by cutting out the blood and gore, because it was so excessive when it was originally shown and everything, that it made it funnier because there was so much gore. I highly recommend it. The guy who did it, I think his name's Dan Clark, and he used to work for like Jim Henson Dinosaur Show and stuff, and so he definitely knows how to do some good puppetry and everything. He's actually in the film, and it's very intense. It's got some good laughs and stuff. So Murder Party, again, small budget kind of thing. It's a bunch of people that show up to this warehouse and they're dressed as their favorite movie characters, and then there's this whole series of, you know, it's almost like 10 Little Indians, if memory serves, as far as people being knocked off in different ways and this kind of stuff, and references to films, but also some good gore and some good laughs to it. So I recommend that as well. And then there's one called Blood Car. Gas has risen up to $30-some a gallon, and this guy's trying to figure out a way to make his car run on wheatgrass, because now it's like this big sex symbol if you have a car, because obviously you have a lot of money if you can fill up your tank and go. Tries to get it to run on wheatgrass, ends up cutting his finger. It almost becomes like a Little Shop of Horror kind of thing, where the car will run off of his blood, and pretty soon, rather than using his blood, he turns his engine into this basically killing machine and starts throwing people into the engine, and being able to ride around town and finally get some nookie from the girl that he really has a thing for. So it's good stuff as well. Very small budget, but definitely very enjoyable.
All three of those sound interesting, and they sound like they're trying. Because
yes,
horror comedies today tend to be the scary movie, the haunted house, the let's just throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. I mean, obviously, Cecil's going to argue with me, but I didn't like Cabin in the Woods. In fact, I despised the film. That seems to be the exception when it comes to nowadays them making a horror comedy. Most of the horror comedies that have come out today are much more of a spoof movie than an actual like horror comedy from the 80s, like Vamp or something like that.
I wouldn't really say Cabin in the Woods is a horror comedy. I would put it more into the, as much as I'm like, ugh, on the title, it is more of a meta horror film. It's very referential. I mean, there's a couple of chuckle moments in it, but overall, I think it definitely is more horror.
It struck me as it was trying to be more satirical.
Yeah, well, I mean, as Joss Whedon and I'm forgetting the director who did it, they were calling it the loving hate letter to horror films. They were kind of pointing out a lot of the tropes, and they kind of were spinning them, and they added in a lot of the different creatures and whatnot. And they were having as much fun with the whole, you know, history of horror, and by throwing it all into this one bucket of, hey, you know why horror movies have been like this for all these years? Well, because of this. And I thought that was really clever and fun and cool. But I wouldn't put it into the horror comedy realm.
It made almost all the lists I was looking at today. And I'm like,
really?
Yeah.
I don't see that at all. But whatever.
I was laughing my ass off at it a few times. I mean, that whole call from the Harbinger guy, the old man who runs the gas station, who's warning the kids to turn back and everything. That scene to me was just hilarious. And just, you know, the one character wanting a merman and all this stuff. I mean, I found a lot of it to be very funny.
So to round out the night, what would you consider the best era of horror comedies? Because I don't believe that today, as you know, let's say 2010 and up, are producing horror comedies that are worth a shit. I would have to say the 1980s is where the true horror comedies came from, but then I'm also biased against towards most things of the 1980s.
I think there's definitely good horror comedies out there. I mean, I think, though, that they're tending to play stuff against horror conventions a little bit more. I grew up with these 80s films. I've mentioned Pandemonium. I've mentioned Evil Dead 2. I've mentioned, you know, so many other films that were out in the 80s. So I, you know, that to me is the key. If you guys haven't seen the film, just by the way, Cemetery Man, I highly recommend that one as well.
I've seen that as like De La Mort or something like that.
De La Morte.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The phenomenal film.
I still think they're doing it today. I think that I kind of gravitate towards 80s and 90s, but it's also what I'm grown up with. But to say that they're not making horror comedies when you've got Shaun of the Dead, Behind the Mask, got Feast, Slither,
Hatchet.
But you've also got all of the Screams and all the Scream. I mean, there's
Scream was 90s, though.
But they're still making Scream movies. They're making a Scream TV show next year.
But what I'm saying is that doesn't negate the fact that they're not making good horror comedies. It just means that they're also making other not good horror comedies. I mean, I haven't seen Scream 4 yet, so I can't say. But I think that there still is a lot of really good horror comedies coming out. It's just that, unfortunately, they're probably being overlooked because there are awful ones like the Haunted House movies and the later Scary Movies and anything that kind of tries to the paranormal activity. that was the best name you guys could come up with.
That's almost as bad as the Hungover games.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, when it comes to horror comedy, sometimes it takes TV to do it right. Did either of you see the MTV series Death Valley a couple of years ago?
Yeah, it was. I only caught a couple, but it was funny. I thought it was cool. It was basically cops with like vampires and zombies and
stuff.
Yeah,
it's cops set in a world where vampires, zombies, and werewolves exist, and it was hilarious. I went into this wanting to hate it. It's on MTV. It's essentially, you know, found footage-ish since it's shot like Cops, and it's created by Rob Zombie's little brother. I'm like, this is gonna suck. My wife and I watched the pilot, and we were like, this is fantastic. Where can we find Mike White, who is a true horror comedy? Because working with him is a horror, but he's a comedy on the air.
Such a cut up, aren't I?
Aren't you?
Yeah. You can find me over at projectionboothpodcast.com.
Where can we find Cecil, who is neither horrific nor funny?
I am neither. You are correct, sir. You can find me over at goodbadflix.com as well as geekjuicemedia.com. Grumble, grumble, something Hadley.
Well, speaking of Hadley, you can find Hadley at 1201beyond.com, where you can get a t-shirt and stuff, and you can contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Have a good night, guys, and remember, if you're not scared, it's not a horror comedy. If you're not laughing, it's not a horror comedy. You have to do both.
Radio Drone is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.